Gerald Turner, Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics, and president of SMU in Dallas. I'm joined today by Britt Kerwin, the commissioner's co-chair and chancellor of the University System of Maryland, Carol Cartwright, a Knight Commission member and president of Bowling Green State University, Lynn Elmore, a Knight Commission member and chief executive of iHoops, and Janet Hill, vice president of Alexander & Associates and a trustee of Duke University. We're here to discuss a report by the Knight Commission entitled Restoring the Balance, Dollars, Values, and the Future of Intercollegiate Athletics. I want to express my thanks to the 17 other Knight Commission members whose names are listed in the report for their dedication of time and talent to this work, and particularly to Henry Beenan, President Emeritus of Northwestern University, who along with President Cartwright helped to provide us leadership in this effort. And before we discuss our report, I want to recognize and thank Paula Ellis, who is here and is Vice President for Strategic Initiatives for the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. The Knight Foundation has supported the efforts of the Knight Commission since it was founded in 1989. Prior commission reports have made a major impact on the governance and academic reforms that have occurred in college sports over the past 20 years. We hope this report will similarly advance much-needed policy changes in college athletics. I also want to recognize Jim Ish, who is here today. Jim is the NCAA's interim president and chief financial officer. And Jim has spearheaded much of the NCAA's good work in improving the financial reporting procedures that institutions must follow and facilitating helpful dialogue on financial responsibility. And we look forward to working with Jim and the NCAA staff on these issues. There are many other leaders here with us in Washington, D.C. today, and we want to thank you for being present, and you'll be hearing from a number of them a little bit later on in our program. And during this briefing, we will describe the report that those on the phone have received via email. This report can be found at restoringbalance.knightcommission.org. Those in the room have a hard copy, and over the next several days, the report will be received by campus leaders, athletics officials, higher education leaders, and government officials. After we describe the report, we have several leaders who wish to make statements of support, and then we will take questions. Now I'll turn it over to Britt Kerwin to provide initial background and to review the first portion of our recommendations. Britt?
Thank you, Gerald. In October 2008, the Knight Commission held the first of a series of public meetings to examine financial issues involving intercollegiate athletics. A survey involving 94 football bowl subdivision university presidents was conducted for the commission as part of its 18-month-long study. We thank those 95 presidents for their participation and candor. Their responses and concerns helped to guide the commission's work. One of the survey's findings was that presidents felt limited in their ability to keep athletic spending in check by making decisions and reforms on their own. As a result, they saw increasing revenues as their best alternative in dealing with pressures to remain competitive and to reduce athletics' reliance on institutional funding. However, the majority of presidents favored working collectively to address what they felt were unsustainable trends in athletics expenditures. This report provides measures that can be acted upon swiftly and that can address the very issues of concern to the presidents as expressed in the survey. This report is particularly timely given the commercially driven agendas of conference realignments that have dominated the news this past week. There is every reason to believe that the direction the major programs are headed will lead to further escalation in athletic spending and even greater imbalances in the fiscal priority for athletics over academics. Let me first review some of the startling data revealed during our examination. First, median athletic spending in big-time college sports has grown nearly 38% from 2005 to 2008, while the growth for academic spending was only 20%. Second, the 10 public institutions spending the most on college sports are on pace to spend more than $250 million on athletics on average by 2020. Despite the escalation in spending these programs have experienced over the past 5 years, the average number of athletes participating in these programs has been flat. These programs have an average of 600 athletes. Third, median athletic spending per athlete at institutions in each major athletic conference ranges from 4 to nearly 11 times more than median spending on education-related activities for students. Fourth, the reality for most programs is much different than recent headlines would have you believe. Most athletics programs rely on significant institutional support to balance their budgets. According to a USA Today analysis, just 7 universities generated enough athletics revenue to cover their expenses in each of the past 5 years. All the rest are using funds that could be used to support their academic missions in order to balance their athletic budgets. One of the overarching principles that guided our work is that athletics financial policies should strengthen, not diminish, institutions' broader educational mission. Our blueprint for reform and for restoring a fiscal balance in college sports is to strengthen accountability for intercollegiate athletics through 3 core principles. First, requiring public transparency of financial reports, including better measures to compare athletic spending to academic spending. Second, rewarding institutions that make academic values a priority. Third, treating athletes as students first and foremost, not as professionals. I will begin by addressing the first area and will turn it over to my colleagues to discuss the others. The first set of recommendations focus on requiring public transparency of financial reports, including better measures to compare athletic spending to academic spending. Academic reform in intercollegiate athletics began in earnest when graduation rates were first shared publicly. We believe the same will be true for financial reform when there is far greater transparency on athletics expenditures. As I just noted, nearly all athletics programs rely on institutional funds to balance their budgets. Therefore, these budgets have a real impact on college students and the cost of their education. As a result, financial data ought to be transparent and readily available to students, parents, trustees, and taxpayers who have a stake in the spending. As mentioned earlier, the presidential survey responses guided our work, and more than 80% of the presidents believe greater transparency for athletics finances is needed. Our specific recommendations for greater transparency are, first, each institution must make public its financial reports that they file with the NCAA. Second, these reports should include information on long-term debt and capital spending, and should also include improved measures that compare rates of spending in athletics and academic spending. On the multimedia site for this report, we have a number of graphs and data tables that show how conferences currently stack up against each other using these measures that compare athletic spending to academic spending. In addition to making financial reports more transparent, we recommend there be strengthened oversight. One of our specific recommendations for this strengthened oversight is to reinforce governing board responsibilities. The commission endorses the 2007 guidelines issued by the Association of Governing Boards concerning board responsibilities related to intercollegiate athletics. These guidelines highlight the attention that must be given to transparency and accountability on athletic spending. I'll now turn our presentation back over to Gerald Turner to discuss the second recommendation. For
For those of you here in the room, the second principle is noted up here on our board, and it is to reward practices that make academic values a priority. There are two different recommendations in this area. The first addresses eligibility for championships, and the second recommends a set of new financial incentives to more closely tie revenue distribution to academic values. The first recommendation is to determine eligibility for championships at the start of each new year and to condition such eligibility on teams being on track to graduate at least half their athletes. Using the NCAA's new metrics, this would require a team to have an APR score of 925 in order to be eligible for postseason play that year. As you may know, the Knight Commission first advocated a 50% graduation rate benchmark for postseason eligibility in our 2001 report, and the NCAA has adopted policies that have moved toward that goal. However, the Commission believes that the current standards remain too low and that it takes too long, typically several years, for postseason bans based on poor academic results to be enforced. The Commission strongly believes that tournament slots and the financial rewards that accompany them should be reserved for teams whose current members meet eligibility, academic eligibility standards. We're fortunate that their current U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, understands the value of college athletics participation. A former basketball player at Harvard, Secretary Duncan has been supportive of raising the bar for academic standards to enable tournament eligibility. Secretary Duncan has issued the following statement in support of this recommendation, and I will read a portion of it now. Quote, "With this report, the Knight Commission has shown once again its steadfast commitment to protecting educational priorities and strengthening accountability in intercollegiate athletics. I join the Knight Commission in calling for stronger eligibility standards for postseason play. The Commission recommends that teams not on track to graduate 50% of their players be banned from postseason competition. Whatever the exact benchmark, I've proposed a 40% graduation rate cutoff that would increase to a 50%. The NCAA needs to strengthen its use of the Academic Progress Rate, APR, index to protect the interest of student athletes and the integrity of their parent institutions in a more rigorous and timely fashion." End of quote. Secretary Duncan's entire statement can be found on our website. The second recommendation is to tie revenue distribution more closely to academic values by having the NCAA and individual FBS conferences create a new revenue distribution fund called the Academic Athletics Balance Fund. This new fund would draw from the current allocation provided for success in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Specifically, the current percentage of shared revenues provided in the fund for winning should be cut by at least half, from 40% to 20%, and savings should be reallocated to the new Academic Athletics Balance Fund. In April of this year, the NCAA distributed $167 million to conferences based upon tournament appearances and success. Under this recommendation, $83 million would have been allocated based upon appearances and wins, and the same amount, $83.5 million, would be allocated to the Academic Athletics Balance Fund. Institutions will be eligible for these funds if their teams have APR scores that predict at least a 50% graduation rate, and if they demonstrate an appropriate balance between institutional investments in athletics and academics. Since FBS institutions spend the most on athletics, and because they have an additional shared income stream, we are recommending that that additional financial incentives be made available for the Academic Athletics Balance Fund for these FBS institutions. Specifically, these funds would come by reallocating 20% of the Bowl Championship Series revenue to the Academic Athletics Balance Funds for these FBS conferences. I'll now turn it over to my colleague, President Cartwright, a discussion of our third principle.
We want to emphasize that this new revenue distribution fund that was just outlined by President Turner is vitally important. To preserve the integrity of college sports, the Commission believes that we can no longer base shared revenues so heavily on winning, but instead on maintaining the right balance between athletics and academics. We also must treat athletes as students first and foremost, not as professionals. This treatment cannot be merely a statement of philosophy. It must guide our approach in areas such as budgeting, policies, expectations, and the staffing devoted to students' athletics development. This third overarching principle has been fundamental to the Commission's work since its very first report. There are several specific recommendations in our report that address this goal, such as reducing the length of seasons, both by reducing the number of regular season games or competitions and by eliminating or reducing non-traditional seasons. We note that the majority of presidents supported these ideas in the presidential survey, as did the Division I-A Athletics Directors Association. We also note that some high-profile college football and basketball teams have evolved into very elaborate operations that rival professional sports teams in the number of support personnel and in compensation provided to their coaches. Expectations and time demands on college athletes have risen alongside these investments. Our recommendations address areas where we believe cost containment can be achieved by putting college sports back into perspective. First, we recommend that new rules be established to limit the number of non-coaching personnel assigned to specific sports. And here we're referring to positions such as directors of sports operations and video personnel. We also recommend examining scholarship opportunities to assess whether costs can be reduced without eliminating equitable opportunities for men and women. As a starting point, we believe that a conservative reduction of 8 to 10 fewer football scholarships should be implemented in the FBS. Now let me turn this over to my colleague and fellow commission member, Len Elmore.
Thank you, President Cartwright. Now, you've heard about these recommendations from a presidential perspective, and I'd like to speak about them from a former athlete's perspective. As a former collegiate basketball player who also had the fortunate opportunity to play professionally, I've devoted a better part of my career to enhancing college athletes' experiences. There must be a bright line between college and professional sports. These recommendations will help to better distinguish that line. We're not saying that there cannot be an investment in sports. We are saying that the investment needs to be put in perspective. One of our recommendations urges that pursuit of revenues not infringe on athletics rights or their academic obligations. And we specifically note that rules should not allow commercial sponsors or other third parties to use athletes' names or images for financial gain or to promote commercial entities. We cannot act like pros in the way we create our revenues, schedule our games, and pay our coaches without infecting the student-athlete experience. Our focus must be on ways to preserve and promote college athletes' educational and athletic opportunities and to ensure that college athletics remain a part of, not apart from, the central mission of colleges and universities. We invite you to read more about the report on the Knight Commission's website. This multimedia report contains additional graphs and data. And there are also clips from the Commission's prior meetings where we have had extensive dialogue with a wide range of experts, including many former athletes. We extend our thanks to all those who have shared their opinions and insights with the Commission. Now I'll turn it back over to Chancellor Kerwin for the wrap-up.
Thank you very much, Lenny. I will conclude by acknowledging that these reforms will not solve all the challenges we face, but they do provide a solid foundation on which to build. The bottom line is that we must make financial decisions for athletics that will strengthen, not detract, from our university's broader educational missions. The recommendations are straightforward and can be acted upon swiftly. We urge the NCAA board to enact each of these policy changes as quickly as possible. This concludes the formal presentation of the report. I would now like to call upon Janet Hill, who is a member of the commission and who also serves as a trustee at Duke University, where her son Grant had a wonderful academic and athletic career. Janet will make a few brief remarks about the report and introduce two of the leaders here today who wish to offer statements of support. Janet?
Thank you, Chancellor Kerwin. I speak from my perspective as a university trustee and as a supporter of college sports. My son Grant and my husband Calvin had wonderful careers as college athletes. Our current environment requires these reforms to preserve all that is good about college sports. As a board member, my view is that intercollegiate athletics cannot expect to be immune to the standards of transparency and accountability that we require for all other aspects of the university. And these recommendations offer a solid start to restoring the balance, and I strongly support them. In addition to the statement of support that President Turner conveyed from Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, we are fortunate to have other leaders here with us today who wish to offer their own brief statements. I'll call on Rick Ligon, President of the Association of Governing Boards, first.
Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate being invited to share just a few comments on the release of the Knight Commission report, Restoring the Balance. Some of you know AGB has been supportive of the Commission's leadership on these challenging issues since the Commission was established nearly 20 years ago. Putting collegiate athletics in the context of the overall educational environment is more important now than ever before. Our institutions are under increasing scrutiny from the public and public policymakers, and few, if any, of our colleges and universities can afford to operate as they have in the past. So the data and recommendations in this specific report are all the more impressive. And when implemented, they will rebalance athletics into the academic mission of our institutions. The governing boards need to play an appropriate role in this effort, and you've heard some about that. Bringing balance and rationale to the management of college sports requires appropriate governing board engagement. That section of the commission report that refers to strengthened oversight appropriately includes governing board responsibilities, and boards will be an important part of advancing and implementing the commission's specific recommendations. Appropriate board engagement and understanding should include both clear support when their president takes a bold or controversial stand regarding rebalancing intercollegiate athletics, including president's support for the recommendations contained in this Knight Commission report, and then holding their president accountable to meet appropriate academic and financial goals for their college sports programs. Boards and individual board members need to know that the primary trust for which boards are held accountable is to educate. As the report states, athletic success should not be based solely on wins and losses, but rather should reflect an institution's mission and overall values. Therefore, boards need to encourage and support policies that focus on the well-being of student athletes, including improved graduation rates, and establishing realistic and appropriate revenue and expense projections for athletics, including on the issue of setting coaches' salaries, limiting subsidies of athletics programs, and monitoring capital expenditures for athletics, all of which are key elements in the report. I hope that the specific recommendations in the report will be given active consideration and support by institution leadership, that being presidents and boards, accrediting agencies, NCAA leadership, other higher education associations, as well as the media and the general public. AGB is committed to continuing to advocate sound governance principles to boards about their fiduciary responsibilities as they relate to intercollegiate athletics. And I know that our board of directors will urge our continued work both with the Knight Commission and the NCAA to advance specific recommendations that will bring the kind of transparency and accountability called for in this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. We're also pleased to have Assistant Director of the Arizona Board of Regents, Mark Denke, here. Mark will present a statement on behalf of one of the University of Arizona Regents, former U.S. Senator Dennis DeConcini.
I also thank you and good afternoon. On behalf of former United States Senator Dennis DeConcini and current regent and with the governing board for the Arizona University System, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the Knight Commission's financial reform recommendations for sports college sports. Athletics are an important part of many colleges and universities in bringing together the campus communities they serve. But in recent decades, the competition of college sports has led to an imbalance between spending on athletics and spending on academics, with athletics oftentimes getting a much larger share of the institutional resources. The Knight Commission's recommendations are clear and common sense measures that should be embraced by all universities across the country. The Arizona Board of Regents looks forward to a full review and discussion of these recommendations and would encourage university trustees across the nation and the NCAA to study them as well, with an eye toward possible implementation in order to provide greater transparency, greater accountability for intercollegiate athletic programs. Thank you very much.
Good morning. That concludes our portion of the presentation for today. We are now going to open up the lines on the phone and in the room for questions. The operator on the phone, can you explain to the folks on the line how they can get in the queue for questions, please?
Absolutely. For those on the phone, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, star 1 over the phone.
And I would look to the room first. We have Teresa has a mic, and so we ask that if you do have a question, you raise your hand and she will bring the mic over to you so that folks on the phone can hear as well. Do I have any questions in the room? Oh, okay. And one more thing, please identify by your name and affiliation, please.
David Moltz from Inside Higher Ed. As you mentioned something earlier, that the NCAA's APR process of manning teams through the postseason was too slow, and basically that there were sort of too many steps towards getting teams banned postseason-wise. Is 1 year enough time to sort of pass judgment is for postseason play or not? Could you just explain a little bit more of what your problem is with the APR's length that is by which it bans teams?
I think the basic idea by the commission is that the players, oftentimes, if one goes through that process, the players who were not meeting the 925 have gone. The whole sometimes the coaches have gone. It takes enough time that the immediacy is lost, and so you can have a number of the teams that have players that only stay a year or two, or those that are not that academic committed, create the score, and then it may be 2 or 3 years later that those student athletes that are there at the time have to go through the lack of competition. So the idea was to make it more immediate, to make it more reflective of the current situation.
Gerald, let me just add a word on that. What we are basically saying is that to participate in a championship, you'd need an APR of 925. And currently, programs where the APR is under 900, they have several years to make changes and improvements. And, you know, quite frankly, it's not clear that they would ever lead to an inability to participate in championships. So we think this is a much stronger statement about the importance of academics and the importance of the institutional commitment to strong academics.
Just by way of clarification, the first speaker was Dr. Turner and the second was Dr. Kerwin. I would love it if you would identify yourselves for the folks on the phone. Sure. We are now going to take a call from, or a question from the phone, please.
We'll go to Katie with the New York Times.
Hi. I'm just kind of wondering, given the developments over the past few weeks with the conference realignment, you know, many observers have said, you know, over the last few weeks, if anything, which it's shown us that winning and brand and fan base matters so much when dividing up these revenues. Given that the developments over the past few weeks, what makes you think that conferences and member universities would be amenable to changing the way that they distribute these revenues?
Well, this is Britt Kerwin. You know, I think the situation we're in right now is basically an arms or financial race to generate more and more money to support intercollegiate athletics. And it's at a time when our institutions are under such incredible pressure to maintain the integrity of their academic programs. The survey indicates that presidents recognize that the current model is not sustainable, but acting alone or as a conference, it's difficult to make the changes. So we think the new approach here is that there would be some collective action bringing in all of the NCAA institutions to a new standard, new strategies for how revenue would be realized, and we're hopeful that the sense of a collective action will gain support, and that the NCAA board will act on these recommendations.
I think this is Gerald Turner. I think we also believe that any increase in funds at a level of a new TV contracts or whatever else will quickly be absorbed into the same kinds of escalations of costs, whether it's coaches' salaries, staff members, or whatever else. And very quickly, you'll be right back where we are today. And I think the presidents in the survey generally communicated a sense that you might could increase revenue, but they also know that if that occurs, it just gets absorbed and nothing really changes, except the health of the entire FBS system, all 120 schools, suffers. The disparity between the top and the middle, let alone the bottom, continues to grow, and that within each conference, you see strains within those conferences simply trying to keep up with the two or three are at the top. I think that's best shown by the USA Today evaluation of the data showing that over 5 years, only seven schools made their budgets without institutional transfers. And so our sense is really this can keep going up. It just makes the disparities across the FBS broader. It makes them within conferences eventually show up. And nothing's done about the sustainability of the model in general. It all gets absorbed and it goes on with the same challenges and problems that it has now.
I'd like to take a question from the room, if there is one. Oh, hold on one second.
I'm Muriel Howard from the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. I think we all know in terms of the issue of stronger academic requirements for students to be able to compete athletically, that it all begins long before they enter college. So I was wondering if the commission is planning to do anything with P-12 coaches or athletic directors to make them more aware of the need and the future requirements in terms of having to really stand by these standards.
This is Carol Cartwright. We know from prior experience that when a group such as the NCAA or the Knight Commission makes a statement about expectations, that individuals begin to think about how they can revise behaviors, policies, et cetera, to meet those standards. We certainly saw that in the strengthening of academic requirements to be eligible to participate, for example. So while there's not a specific project underway with the Knight Commission to address the issue that you've raised, we believe that there will be an important ripple effect and that other groups who are interested in these areas will take up these issues and that it will have the effect of pulling toward some of the expectations that we have espoused in this and earlier reports.
This is Gerald Turner, and I think with each step along the way for initial eligibility and getting the course requirements in place, the NCAA did a good job of, after Prop 48, after Prop 16, after all of them that came along, in informing the high school associations and so on to make sure that the student athletes knew that they needed to increase the number of English courses, science courses, math courses, and so on, so that the communication has to be continual. But I think with each increase of initial eligibility, there's been a lot of work with the individual high school associations to make sure it gets implemented. The continuing eligibility once a student athlete gets to campus is, I think, the real challenge we have now.
And this is Carol again. I think we want to emphasize the important role of transparency in what has happened thus far to improve academic performance and academic standards. When the graduation rates began to become public, people sat up and paid attention, and more policies were changed. NCAA legislation was approved. We believe that transparency on the fiscal data can have the same kind of effect.
I'm going to take a call or a question from the phone, please.
Sure. We'll go next to Alan with the Associated Press.
Yes, hi. The commission's been around for about 20 years. Some of its past recommendations have been embraced, others not. How optimistic are you that these current round of suggestions will in fact lead to policy changes? And is there some frustration that more of the commission's previous reforms haven't been adopted?
Well, I think the commission has a very good track record in terms of recommendations that have come to be embraced by the NCAA and the institutions. I think the Knight Commission deserves in particular a lot of credit for the academic reforms that have led now to the APR. So I sort of question the idea that the Knight Commission's recommendations haven't had as much impact as one might like. Secondly, I think the dynamic at work today is one I referenced just a moment ago, and that is this disparity between the increasing athletic budgets and the decreasing or challenged academic budgets, operating within a overarching university context. It creates, in my mind, a sort of a conflict that challenges the principles of the basic principles of the what institutions are founded to do. And so I think the time is right because of the fiscal crisis that we see across the states. The time is right to embrace these recommendations, and I think it's the larger fiscal context that gives this report special currency and importance at this particular time. So based on the survey, President saying that overwhelmingly saying that we can't sustain the current fiscal model, I have some hope, some optimism that these recommendations will be taken seriously and embraced.
This is Gerald Turner again. And as we said, and particularly Britt said in his comments of review, our sense is that this is sort of at the initial stages We would love to have announced an APR type of mechanism or suggested one for the NCAA to consider, but that we, you've heard us say over and over again that when the transparency occurred in the academic preparation and performance of student athletes, that's when the activity began that over time resulted in the membership coming up with the APR formula. And so we're hopeful that this report with its recommendations provide the same kind of base that some of those academic reform measures in the 90s did that led to APR, that the same kind of activity will follow on here. We know there's still a lot of work to do.
And I think it's worth noting that the commission has always tried to find the right balance between bold and stretch recommendations, but also tempered with an understanding that you go at implementation a step at a time and that there are important groups that need to be engaged in the work. The Knight Commission originally argued in favor of much stronger presidential leadership, and we see that playing out every day now as the NCAA Board of Directors, populated by president, takes up this important work. I think you can also see that the commissioners are a rather tenacious group. When we haven't succeeded in implementing a recommendation from a prior report, we come right back at it. The idea, for example, of having to achieve a certain academic criterion in order to get into the basketball tournament is a recommendation that we have had in the past, but we see it's important to bring it forward again, and we see a new context in which it might be thought about differently and more positively.
This is Britt Kerwin. You know, the NCAA and all of our institutions frequently speak about the importance of academics as an integral part of intercollegiate athletics programs. And when you really look at what is being proposed there, we're just saying let's live by that principle. If we're going to generate more revenue, let's make certain that a significant fraction of that revenue is dedicated to rewarding high academic performance. That's really just living up to the standards and values of the NCAA and our institutions.
Okay, I am going to go to someone in the room here. And so, Peter?
My name is Peter McPherson. I'm the president of the Association of Public and Land-Grant University, which the membership of which is basically all the large public universities in the country. I believe the comments about students being the center of things, we really need students as athletes, not athletes as students. I think that kind of thought that pervades this report is so very important. Do comment there on the transparency of the finances. The explosion of the gap between education expenditures per student versus the education expenditures per student athlete is really unsustainable. Transparency of those figures will be of help to presidents around this country. I strongly endorse what you've done here. Now there's some cleanup work that we need to do with these figures, having looked at those figures over the years. NCAA really needs to figure out how to handle a number of the cost allocation questions and have them be consistent. I thank you for allowing me to comment.
This is Britt Kerwin. I'd just like to comment on Peter's remark. The report acknowledges that the data is not yet perfect, and you're absolutely right. We do need some refinement to ensure that we're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, and so your point is well taken, and that is actually incorporated within in the report, that thought.
I'm going to take a caller question, and then we have another one in the room. Go ahead, caller.
We'll go to Andrea with the Orlando Sentinel.
Yes, I'm wondering with this new Big 12 situation where Texas is going to get a large share of the TV money revenue, and it's going to keep growing a gap between Texas and most of the rest of the conferences, How exactly are some of these reforms going to change that or even begin to change gaps between haves and have-nots? You mentioned it was going to continue in conferences, but in terms of these recommendations, how exactly is that going to help?
This is Gerald Turner. I think what has to occur, I mean, there are some institutions that whatever system you set up financially, they'll come out fine. And so I think what our hope is that by calling attention to really the lack of sustainability of the current model for most institutions and the importance of having a healthy FBS system, that if you're going to have Division 1A or FBS, whatever you want to call it, then it's important that that system be healthy within itself, that you can't just have a dozen schools that are doing quite well go off and play the sports themselves. I mean, it requires a context of a number of schools. And we're hopeful that the public visibility and the general public support for institutions across the board, all 120 of them, creates a stronger climate in which the sense of corporate responsibility for the health of all the institutions at that level will occur. And I think obviously within each conference you're going to see continued stress. I know as we were working on this over the last 18 months and after the survey that the 95 presidents of the 120 completed, each of us had a number of conversations with people within the automatic qualifying conferences who are really struggling. And that shows up again if only seven of them can meet the requirements, because any increase simply raises the bar for everyone. And if the ability to meet that bar isn't some way or another competitive or comparable, then the strain just continues. So I think public awareness, a greater sense of the corporate good, and a sense that intercollegiate athletics as a whole, both within the community and on each campus, requires that everybody be able to participate at some level and within the context of again, these being student-athletes, not athletes that are students.
Gerald, this is Britt Kerwin. Let me just add to that, you know, for the question that was raised, we didn't get into this extraordinary fiscal imbalance overnight, and we're not going to get out of it tomorrow. What we are doing, we hope, with this report is starting down a path. And we've made this parallel before, but I'll repeat it. The Knight Commission, the NCAA, when they made the transparency on academic performance, we didn't end up with the APR the next year. It took quite a few years before we reached this, we think, very substantial measure of academic performance by student athletes. So we're not, the question with regard to Texas and the Big 12, now Big 10, or I guess you can't call it the Big 10, but whatever, this change isn't going to happen immediately, but we feel that we are starting down a path that we hope will bring the right kind of balance to expenditures on athletics and academics.
This is Carol Cartwright, and we should remember that one of the recommendations very specifically addresses this issue in signaling that the academic performance matters by creating the Academic Athletics Balance Fund. We're very specifically talking about redistributing revenue based on a variable that we think matters a great deal in this enterprise.
So we're just going to take one more question, and then we're going to have to wrap up. Again, if folks are interested, we can set up one-on-one interviews following the press briefing. So I'm going to go to this gentleman down there.
Yes, hi, I'm Chris Castile from the Oklahoman. I was kind of following up on your last comment. Your report is about restoring the balance, and I was just kind of wondering, you know, when there was a balance. I mean, there's been big-time college sports for a long time. The numbers are obviously, you know, huge, exponentially bigger than they've been in the past. But I was wondering when there, when you think there was a balance at some schools. And I also wonder, too, whether there's any way to measure whether big-time programs at some schools in some parts of the country actually might help on the academic side, maybe encourage donors to give to capital projects for new academic buildings and such.
Well, I think if you go back, this is Britt Kerwin, if you go back several decades, it was quite common that coaches in many instances were considered members of the faculty, and their salaries were comparable to other salaries within the university. That was certainly true with when I was president one time of Ohio State. That was certainly true with Woody Hayes' salary. So there was an era in which there was, we feel, a much better and more appropriate balance on athletic and academic expenditures. There's been an evolution since that time. It hasn't been a precipitous change, but increasingly revenue has been generated for athletic programs through television contracts and other things that have, in our opinion, put the spending out of balance. So this is not something that happened in a short period of time. It's evolved over quite a number of years, but now you step back and look at where we are, and many of us feel this is not a good place to be and is not a sustainable situation.
Well, thank you. That concludes our press briefing. Again, if you would like to follow up, folks on the phone, we thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
Thank you.